Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Three Finger Special, Aaron O'Brien.
Oh, three. Six if you count both hands.
Well, welcome back, Dave. We missed you last episode, and now you're back.
Oh, thanks. I guess we won't be able to get into an hour-long conversation on comics.
Well, you know, I guess you're not perfect.
I'm not perfect. I'm unfortunately not as comic aficionadoed as you and Guy are.
Well, and the funny thing is we didn't really talk about other comics. We just talked about his comics and writing comics and drawing comics. So there's so much more comics we could actually get into.
This is a true fact.
So we're talking about the Traveler, a character has been near and dear to our hearts in the last couple episodes. And he shows up in three different episodes. It goes into season one, where no one has gone before. Season four, Remember Me. And then season seven, Journey's End.
It's about time we're doing a themed episode again.
I know.
I think it's been over a year.
It has been way over a year, and I want to do more themed because there's just so much fun just to like focus down on like one subject or one character or, you know, something to that nature. So this is always fun.
Oh, but for yes. Sure. And we've had lots of fun speculation about the Traveler in the past. So this will be episode full of speculation.
Much speculation. As for Star Trek news, I haven't really seen much. The only thing that I saw that Shatner said that he'd be open to reprising the role as Kirk again.
Shatner says no to no work.
I know. I mean, we said off mic, I think that's what part of his, I mean, other than his talent, I think part of his success is that he just says, yeah, I'll try that, or yeah, I'll do that, but.
It's like instead of saying, oh, I'll say yes for, you know, to everything for a week, he says it. Oh, at least to acting jobs for his entire life.
Well, if you think he's, you know, Star Trek would probably be like, he came across his table, the script, and he was like, yeah, I'll try it, whatever. I think he's probably done that with other things as well. You know, like...
Rescue 911.
Rescue 9... No, it wasn't Rescue 9...
T.J. Hooker. No, but he was also in Rescue 911. I remember that somewhat vividly as a child watching that episode, watching that show.
Really? Mm-hmm. I don't remember that. I know he did Boston... Obviously, Boston Legal.
Boston Legal, last
big show. But yeah, so, you know...
And that also had Rene Auberjonois. Odo.
Yeah, it did. It absolutely did. I think the thing is, I don't love Shatner and I don't love him doing Kirk. I just think that it's like, do we want to remember him as a 80-year-old man as Kirk? You know, I mean, the last time we saw him as Kirk was Generations, and he was kind of getting a little older, like in his 60s, I think.
Yeah. So, late 50s or early 60s.
Yeah.
At least.
And he still looked good for that age. Don't get me wrong. But I'm just saying it's like, do we really want to see him again? And like, you know, I've seen pictures of him recently. And it's just, I don't know. Whatever.
I don't know. I mean, I'm torn. I don't know if I really want to see him again. Because like, he said before that he doesn't want to just do a cameo. He wants to have like, you know, a decent sized part. And I don't know what he could do as a decent sized part.
Of course he does, yeah.
that wouldn't be a cameo. So I mean like I just don't see him. I just don't see them. I mean that was the whole point of him not being in the 2009 reboot was because they didn't want him to upstage Chris Pine.
Right, I could see him doing.
Oh yeah, he would totally do that. if given the opportunity. But you know, in the original script for Beyond was supposed to be Spock and Kirk, you know, you're supposed to see both generations of them at the same time, and that fell through, you know, partially due to Leonard Nimoy's death and partially due to what a cluster frig the production was. I mean, as bad as the craziest the production seemed on Star Trek Beyond, it's almost even crazier for Star Trek Discovery. So it's just like, what? How come Star Trek can't get anything easy?
Well, let's face it, you know, the thing is, Shatner's, you know, is a big part of Star Trek, and there's no getting around it. And if he was in any of those JJ reboots, he would just, it would just overshadow everybody. So, I don't know.
I mean, like, but could they somehow put him in Star Trek Discovery somehow?
It's like, possible, but as an older guy, I mean, maybe he plays Kirk's father?
Maybe, or like, you know, resurrected Kirk post-TNG era somehow, like doing a flashback of what happened 10 years before he was captain of the Enterprise. I don't know. But if they do a way to link, because usually the first episode of a Star Trek series always somehow links to a previous generation of Star Trek.
Right.
And if they're going to do anything, they'll probably have to do like T'Pol, you know, get Jolene Blaylock for the first episode, you know, just have her somewhere. Or maybe old, Jonathan Archer.
Right.
Because, I mean, you know, in the 2009 movie, Scotty beamed his prize beagle and he was upset about it. So, I mean, Archer's still alive somehow at like 160.
Right. It's true. True enough. Well, you know, it's the future. People live longer. So although, you know, I love Shatner, I just don't know if anything fits into what he's going, you know, how he could fit into anything right now.
Like in a big way, because he said no to doing cameos for Star Trek. So I'm just like, or maybe he's changed his mind. It's like, maybe he's like, well, maybe I'll take a cameo just because it might be my last chance.
Yeah.
Who knows? But maybe we can ask him at Nickel City Con in a week and a half.
Yeah, we'll be seeing him in the flesh. So,
yeah, like actually, it's 2 weeks from today we record. It'll be like a week and a half from the day you guys hear it, because it'll be set. He'll only be here Saturday in Buffalo.
Yeah, right. And just so everyone know, if you are listening to this and you are going to go to Nickel City Con, I will be there. I have a table for my Numenic comics. I'll be at table A21. So if you want to stop by and say, hey, listen to Synthaholics, that'd be awesome. I'd love to talk to you. So definitely stop by if you're there. Dave, we don't have a table for Synthaholics. You're just going to be floating around.
I'm going to be floating around. I'll probably be hanging out at Aaron's table, the Geekiverse table. I don't think Artful Gremlins is having a table, so I'll just be floating around the con. I'll use those Aaron's table and the Geekiverse as like kind of my base of operations as I move around the con. I'll probably be attending a couple panels as well. Because Shatner and Nichelle Nichols is going to be there, so that'd be pretty fantastic to check those out.
Yeah, absolutely. And as we've experienced before, when we did Queen City the Queen City Con, when you had the table there, it was kind of limiting because you're kind of like just trapped at one table and you can't move around. And when you did the second one, where you met the guys from the Geekiverse and in Nerdynomicon and Robbie and all those guys from Artful Gremlins, it was great because you could just kind of float around. And it was
I could hang out with them. I could go do whatever I needed to. Go back, hang out with them some more. It just made things a whole lot easier for me, because I mean, like when we did the Buffalo Comic Con 2 years ago, you had your Visions table and I had my Synthaholics table, and you came over and helped. You know, sometimes I mean, you had your stuff you had to focus on too, so that just made it very hard for one person to run a table. And I'm not selling anything; I'm just trying to get people to talk to me, and not many people really wanted to talk. So, and stop the table. So if I'm mobile, people seem more willing to talk to me.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I think the key is that if you're walking around and you can talk to somebody, you don't have to be stuck at a table and like kind of chained there. And I just think about, I basically, just because you were walking around at last con, how many people we got to meet, or you know, through you, I got to meet through you, and all the relationships we've built in the last year. So less than a year, actually. But
yeah. Yeah, it's pretty exciting. So we're excited about the con, and we just wanted to mention it up front. I will probably mention it at the end, but we wanted to mention it sort of up front in case you guys are in the area and want to come to the con and want to see us. We will be there. I'll probably dress, obviously. I'll probably have a Star Trek shirt on or something. Aaron will be locked down at his table. I might be at the Geekiverse table, so say hi to the Geekiverse people because they've been on our show before. So, I mean, say hi to them as well.
Absolutely. Well, should we start talking about our friend, the Traveler?
The Traveler. He's so friendly. He's almost too friendly. Interesting thing on Memory Alpha is he was actually auditioned for the part of Data. He did not get the part of Data. Instead, he got the consolation prize of showing up 3 times in the series.
Well, yeah, it's a funny thing is his character is so placid and he's very comforting when you talk to him, but I don't think you would have as much of a we'd have as much as a fun time with him. I mean, maybe not. I mean, maybe he would grow into that role, Because, I mean, as we recall, the first season of Data was a little, like, flat. But,
But, like, the thing is, he does have that weird, creepy vibe that Data has, but I think Brent Spiner is slightly less creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, yeah, their makeup colors are very similar.
Yeah,
I mean, he's got, you know, facial prosthetics where Data doesn't, but, like, and then he's got those, like, horrid-looking hands that look like he's like, camel toes. He's got camel toe hands.
Oh, my God.
They look terrible. Like, they're just giant and knotted, and, like, he's got the most biggest fingernails on them. Like, wow.
Oh, my God.
That just doesn't look right at all. It's like two giant toes for hands.
Oh, my God.
And somehow he's supposed to be able to enter these equations in way faster than a guy with 10 regular fingers.
Hmm. Well, anyways.
He can really do those camel toes.
Well, yeah, and which is cool is that the gloves or whatever they gave him to make him look like that, they really look very convincing.
Yeah,
like,
they do.
I don't see it and go like, ah, oh, that looks weird. You know, it really looks good.
I mean, it's a good prosthetic. It still looks weird. It's just a strange hand structure.
Oh yeah, well I'm a little more familiar because in the X-Men, one of my favorite characters, the X-Men, is Nightcrawler, and he's got the same fingers.
Oh, okay.
And toes too. So so anyway, so we first meet the Traveler. He is
Kaczynski's
assistant, right? Kaczynski's assistant.
How did he get that job?
You know, I think he must have, from what I can tell, especially from the Remember Me episode, there must be some validity to his warp field ideas, but I think the Traveler basically pushed it over the edge.
Yeah, because it's weird because, like, I think they referenced Kaczynski in both episodes.
Yeah, the Traveler's besides the Journey's End. I don't think they referenced him then.
Okay, but they definitely did in Remember Me.
Oh, yeah, yeah, because obviously Wesley's working on his warp field structure, which is funny that he would even give it a second thought.
Yeah, you know, and then that many years later.
Right, exactly, so.
I guess it's because he is having that weird talk with the Traveler in the Where No Man Has Gone Before, where the Traveler's asking him, do you think this will work?
Yeah, well, and, you know, I guess it's more of anything is that I think he had some validity to it, but obviously Kaczynski was such an ass in the show.
I love him, though. He's so funny.
Oh, he's great. I mean, he's the perfect.
He's like he's like the asshole you love to hate and love at the same time.
Right, so he's a blowhard who obviously has, you know, he thinks of himself way too much, but it's the Traveler.
He lost his communicator. He just goes around without a communicator on the entire time.
And what ranked it was Kaczynski too? Like he didn't seem to have any real rank.
I wonder if he's just like a petty officer because he didn't have like, I don't think he had any pips and he didn't have a communicator. He's like a glorified civilian scientist or something. But if he's a scientist, why isn't he wearing blue?
Yeah.
Well, I guess engineering people wear gold, so I guess.
Yeah, he's gold. He's gold, but yeah, I don't really know what he was supposed to, like, what his official position was, because he had like a little square thing on the side of his collar. And this is first season, so uniforms are a little different, too. They don't even have a collar. They're just the pajamas, so.
Yeah, just the pajamas. They're good, comfy. Actually, no, they were not comfy. They were spandex all the way up and down. It gave Patrick Stewart back problems in the first season.
Poor Patrick Stewart.
Poor Patrick Stewart.
Wearing pajamas. Complaining.
Super tight pajamas.
let's see. So he, yeah, so he go ahead.
He gets them. So they're totally skeptical about these warp equations and they use them and the Traveler kind of goes, oops.
Oh, you mean when they're doing their first test?
Yeah. It's just like, I'm like, I don't understand. Like, I feel like he did it on purpose. And then he was like, oops.
No, what my theory is that Kaczynski and the Traveler come aboard the Enterprise and they're doing their test. And the Traveler sits next to Wesley And I think the Traveler took a shining to Wesley automatically. And I think it was like love at first sight.
Oh, just, you know, the man-boy love association. He's the king Manbla. Of it. Manbla. The man-boy love association. It's from South Park, I think.
You know Manbla's real. You know that, right?
Oh, it's real?
It's a real thing.
Did last podcast and last talk about it, too?
I believe so, yeah. Yeah, so Manbla's real, but so whatever you want to consider their relationship.
No, but the thing is, like, I know this is kind of skipping ahead, but I think the Traveler was Jack Crusher, or at least pretended to be Jack Crusher for at least part of their married relationship between Beverly and Jack.
Wait, so you're saying the Traveler knocked up Beverly?
I think so. I don't know why.
That's not that they didn't say that in the episode.
They didn't, but that's my theory because that's I feel like that's why. I feel oh like God. That's and the thing and if you listen to the terminology, whenever he has that the vision, his vision quest where he sees his dad, it's like I left you and your mom. Not like I died, I left you and your mom. And Wesley's being manipulated by the Traveler the entire episode because the Traveler's being different people.
Wait a second. See, here's where I have a problem with that, is that he said that he didn't, the Traveler, when he had his vision, Wesley had his vision quest with the, and he saw his father, Jack Crusher. Jack Crusher basically said that, it's time for you to go on your own way, you know, take your own road. But
that could be the Traveler being Jack Crusher telling him to do that.
But when he woke up, when he talked to the Traveler or what was his name? Lakanta, mm-hmm. The guy who was posing as the Traveler posing as Lakanta, the, one of the, colonists mm-hmm. on the planet.
Yeah.
He said he didn't do anything. That was totally his own vision.
I don't trust the Traveler. He's kind of a creepy pedophile, so he can do whatever he wants.
I'll give you that. He is
the king of Manbla. So, but I just always get like how is just two humans? How do two humans produce a Traveler? It just doesn't make sense that it's like, oh, they compare him to Mozart. But I'm like, that's not being a prodigy and being like, you know, a different species that has these powers isn't exactly the same thing.
I don't know. I think I have a different – I don't see Wesley as being the, you know, the Jesus Christ or the Quetzalcoatl of the Star Trek universe. I see him more of as like he is a prodigy. He's a brilliant – person, and the Traveler notices talents and says, hey, this kid's got something, and maybe I'll swing around in another, you know, six, you know, what, how many years, 4 years, you know, till he was in almost done with his time in the academy. That's my take, you know.
Both are valid enough because we only have three episodes with the Traveler, and so much is left to interpretation. I just take it as that, like, the Traveler was Jack. I mean, he can obviously take other people's forms, so he could have taken Jack Crusher's form, pretended to die, and just continued traveling, checked back up on his kid, you know, see if he's smart, and where no man has gone before, comes back to save his, you know, quote unquote ex-wife from his son's trap that he made accidentally, and then he's like stalking his son for the entire episode of, you know, Journey's End, and then takes him away from everything that he's known. I don't know. It just that's how it kind of seems to me.
I don't know. Mine's just I feel more linear. Just it's, you know, basically, you know, Wesley was born. Unfortunately, his father died, and the Traveler bumped into him and said, "Hey, this kid's smarter than your average bear," you know, kind of thing. So
yeah. It just the way when Jack Crusher said, when I left you and your mom, it just like,
Well, I think it kind of meant that Jack Crusher's spirit is still traveling through the universe. He just hasn't, I mean, his spirit is still there, but
traveling, you know, he's a traveler.
Well, yeah, but I don't see it the same way.
Or a different traveler. I don't know.
I just meant like, you know, like you die in like, as you know, theologians say that your spirit, your soul still keeps going. So that's kind of how I pictured it. You know, that's when he discussed it.
But I mean, I think your point is valid, but I mean, I think mine is equally valid just because, I mean, there's not anything to contradict or support either.
No, there's not. Nothing.
I mean, they're both. I mean, yours is probably more to the truth, but I like speculating a little bit crazier.
Right.
And it's even creepier if he's a weird pedophile, if that is his son. So, just saying.
Yeah, that would be even weirder. So anyway, Kaczynski does his warp drive thing. It messes up. Traveler is distracted by Wesley, and they get shot off.
What a good looking young Will Wheaton. I got so distracted. Yeah. My three fingers got all hot.
Oh. Ooh, I got a boner in my finger.
A boner in my camel toe.
Ooh. Come sit next to me, Wesley. So they get shot off to Galaxy M33, and they have to get return, which they do in the episode. But
It's 2.7 million light years away, and they estimated that it would be 300-year traveling at maximum warp. And this is like 5 or 6 minutes into the episode. I had to pause it and have a canon aneurysm.
Right.
Well. I texted Aaron. I'm like, wait. So it's going to take 300 years to go 2.7 million light years, but it's going to take 70 to go 70,000 light years. Math doesn't add up. And I did the math, and a maximum warp based on the Kaczynski scale and how far away they are based on maximum warp. And the 300 years, it's only 8.3 years if they were traveling, if Voyager traveled at maximum warp to go back home.
Yeah, but you are talking about season one, Next Generation, and then Voyager. So, I mean, I think they refigured things on the warp scales and stuff like that. I don't know.
Actually, the funny thing is the Memory Alpha also points this out. They didn't do the math the same way. The math is a little bit different. But they said like Voyager was like 3 times slower, 4 times slower than the Enterprise.
Hmm.
If you look at, I mean, I don't know if it is in canon, but I mean, given the math, they're saying that the Voyager is somehow 3 or 4 times slower than the Enterprise.
It's possible. It's possible the Enterprise is just a bigger, faster ship. So,
but warp 9 should be warp 9. Doesn't matter how big or small your ship is. I mean, it's a scale for a reason. Or is it like men or women's clothes? You buy like a size 32, but one size 32 will be too small, one will be just right, one will be too big.
Oh, jeez.
Is that how the warp scale works? It's not.
I don't know, but my experience with clothing and pants especially, it seems to be the case.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Like so is warp scale as crappy as pants, or is warp scale based in science and the numbers mean something? I would say it's based in science, and so the numbers should mean something, unlike pants numbers.
See, I kind of thought that pants would be under science control, you know?
You think 32 inches would be 32 inches, but, you know, no, sometimes it's 30, sometimes it's 34, and it's just like, well why?
Yeah, it's actually literally infuriating to me, because that's probably the only thing I have to go into the changing rooms for is to try on pants.
I hate it so much.
Oh, you're like, oh, I should fit into this type of pants, but no.
Nope.
It's a store. Their measurements are completely different. Anyways, let's get off pants. Get back to the traveler. So
he has no pants.
Not around Wesley.
Nope.
He's got a finger boner.
It's just a jumpsuit that it's probably like Spider-Man's, where you can just like touch it and it'll just fall right off of him, like from the new Spider-Man that's coming out, or just like slackens up and it just falls right off. I bet that's what the traveler has.
I think you're going too far on this. So they get back to their universe or galaxy in where no one has gone before, and the traveler mentions to Picard that there's something really special about Wesley and that you really should try to foster his gifts. And at the end of that episode, Picard makes Wesley acting ensign, which has got to be like completely confounding and infuriating to every other ensign who has actually gone through Academy.
Yeah.
Academy's like, wait, you're just going to make this kid an ensign?
funny bit of side trivia. We were Aaron originally pitched the idea of the show being called The Drunken Ensign, and I'm like, what's even worse than an ensign? A drunken acting ensign.
Ooh, yeah.
And then we decided a single word might be more simpler and stick in people's heads better.
True enough.
Just some trivia.
I completely forgot that. So Wesley becomes acting ensign. Next time we see the Traveler, we get to Remember Me, where Wesley's this is 3 seasons later. Wesley is experimenting with Kaczynski's warp theory, and he creates a warp bubble and somehow traps his mom inside the warp bubble.
This is the best experiment ever. I'm going to put my mom in a hamster cage.
Which it's actually rewatching it. This is a wonderful episode. It's like, is she going crazy, or it's just so cool to watch.
Oh, it's really well done, because like people start disappearing and she's like trying to set up this investigation of people, and then when she starts asking people about like, well, what happened to, how come we only have 300 people? Yeah, it's like we never had a Klingon.
Yeah, we never had a Klingon.
And then when it's just Picard and her, she's like, he's like, there's never ever been anyone else on the ship but you and me.
Just you and me. What are you talking about?
What are you talking about? We'll be banging in every room on the ship. It's great.
So, the idea here is that she gets caught in it, and they don't really reveal, but much later is back in the outside reality. My printer's going off right now. Why printer? Back in the other reality is they realize this, and they're trying to get her back, and the Traveler comes to Wesley's assistance, and
I can't physically take your mother out, but we can try and show her the way.
Right.
But the crazy thing is, it's like she's not having a hallucination. She's in an actual real universe of her making.
Which is shrinking
to the size of the ship and then smaller.
Right. And so the Traveler shows up, and we don't really see him say goodbye, but obviously he was only there for just to help him get his mom out. The next time
when they're doing the calculations to help get his mom out, Wesley starts phasing out of existence like the Traveler did, and where no man has gone before.
Right.
Which is weird.
Yeah, that is pretty weird. I don't know if that's the Traveler or if that's just Wesley.
They both did.
Was the Traveler helping Wesley do that, or was that Wesley himself? Because, I mean, that would kind of make Wesley have superpowers.
Well, I think Wesley does have superpowers. I mean, that's the whole thing of, you know, when we come to Journey's End and he takes him away because he's basically a Traveler, which is why I think the Traveler is really Wesley's real dad.
Interesting. Well, and then last we see him, Journey's End. It's a wonderful episode. It's about these American Indians who have settled into a planet 20 years ago, but they were on a 200-year journey.
But they never call them American Indians. They just call them regular Indians.
Right. Well, but
Earth Indians.
They're Earth Indians.
Earth American Indians, not Earth Indian Indians.
Are we talking about the Indians from the continent of India?
No, we're being racist. No, I mean, the show's being racist.
And they don't even tell you what tribe they're from.
And culturally insensitive.
They're just Indians.
Akichimoya, we are far away from the boners of our fathers.
Oh, my God. Anyways. So.
This is the colony where Chakotay is from, because, you know, they're on the whole point of this episode. It's sort of like a Star Trek Insurrection where they're, you know, having to relocate this colony. Because they're in a place where they don't need to be, but this time they're on the border of Cardassian space. So this is kind of this is the formation of the Maquis. This is specifically made for Voyager and for Deep Space Nine. Like, this is setting up the seeds for that.
Right, right. So the Traveler shows up, and he shows up as one of the colonists. His name is Lakanta.
He looks. He reminds me of Chakotay a little bit. Just the way he looks, a little bit. I was like,
oh. Yeah, a little bit.
Chakotay protege.
And then he says he knew Wesley was coming and all this stuff. So when Wesley
super stalkery and creepy. Just super creepy.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, when we see Wesley at the beginning of Journey's End, he's on
vacation. He is a punk.
I'm sorry, what?
He is a punk.
Yeah, he's on vacation. He's on spring break.
He doesn't want to sleep with his mommy anymore. He gets his own quarters.
Don't you want to stay in the same bed?
Remember, I gave you sex ed? Yeah, it was great. No, but like Geordi shows Wesley this really cool thing that he's been working on, and Wesley's like, "Oh man, this is a piece of crap. Don't you read the most, you know, Engineering Hipsters Weekly?"
Yeah, Hipsters Weekly.
Engineering Hipsters Weekly, because like he's like, "Oh man, this is garbage. Like, didn't you read this guy's article?" And I'm like, oh man, Wesley just being a total jerk.
Well, it's obviously Wesley's unhappy. He doesn't want to be in Starfleet anymore. He doesn't want to be in the Academy anymore. And maybe he's kind of outgrown that role. So when Lakanta takes him on a vision quest, he sees his father, who had passed away when he was a child, like young child.
I think an infant.
Say again?
I think he was an infant.
Oh, that's what I meant, like a baby. And then he tells him, "Hey, you should go on your own path. You shouldn't follow my path. Do your own thing." So that's where Wesley says, "I'm quitting Starfleet," and he takes off, back to the planet. And Lakanta, later on during one of the conflicts with the Cardassians, reveals himself to be the Traveler, and kind of says, "Hey, let's go off in the universe together. Have fun."
Super creepy. But then it turns out that they didn't go off into the universe together. They're going to hang out with the Indians, because the Indians are going to teach him spiritual things, which the Traveler doesn't know anything about.
Well, okay, so those are the three episodes. All three episodes are actually very much worth watching. If you want to see any of those things, a lot of fun to watch them.
Yeah, they're all really good episodes.
Oh yeah. So
even considering where No Man Has Gone Before is like episode 5, I think, of season 1, and season 1's pretty rough. This is actually a pretty good episode for season 1.
Right. And the thing is, there's a couple thoughts here. So first of all, the Traveler is not quite a normal alien. Like they say he is from Tau Alpha C or Tau Ceti, but he's not really I don't think he's an actual alien. I think he's just masquerading as an alien. You know, I think when he shows himself in Journey's End, mm-hmm. I think he's just showing to Wesley. He says, "Remember me," and like, "Oh, you," you know. So
you think he's like sort of like just a spiritual being that happens to manifest physically every now and then?
I think he's sort of like a Q type character, just not as powerful. I think he's sort of a like a guy who kind of just, you know, jumps around exploring. You know, but he has more heightened abilities than an average corporeal being. Mm-hmm. So that's just my take on it. Because remember when Troy first meets him, she says, "I get nothing from him. He's literally not even here. Like there's no thoughts or any emotion or anything coming from him." So, which would make me feel that maybe he's just a.
She gets the same thing from Ferengis though. So.
Yeah, well, Fringies are different too. But
yeah, I know. But just because you can't sense a person doesn't really mean anything.
That's a good point. But
her power, like, I really wish they did more with her power in the show, other than stating basic intuition and common sense. Because I mean, being able to read people's emotions would be great. But like, I just feel like every time like Picard's a counselor, she just says something and it's like, you know, it's pretty much inferred from just common sense or just, you know, basically reading as, you know, people's body language. It's not like she's like deeply insightful of like what's actually happening emotionally to be of any use.
Right. Right. Yeah, that's true. That's a good point. But yeah, so but my feeling is that they're not quite like a Q character. They're maybe just a little bit more elevated than a standard alien or like I said, a corporeal state alien. So maybe they're like somewhat like an energy that can travel through and explore a little easier than us.
Yeah,
so.
like a sub Q, which I mean, like I know you were saying that, you know, you think it's just Wesley's just a normal guy and he was not part Traveler at all. Which I mean, it sort of lines up with what Gene Roddenberry is wanting to do, because I mean, a lot of times early in season one, especially, they meet these aliens and it's like, "Oh well, you're not quite ready. Like, you're getting close, but you're not quite ready to like really be in this part of space or you know, be enlightened like this." And just so it's just kind of like, oh, we're getting there, but we're not. And then Wesley's like being the Mary Sue of the Next Generation and also being named after Gene Roddenberry's middle name. He's kind of like that, you know, that character that just gets you know, has that special thing. And maybe he was just meant to be human, you know, humanity evolved, which is why he's the Mary Sue and can fix everything, even though he's just a kid.
Yeah, I mean, I think they definitely blew. I mean, my original take on Wesley in the beginning was just that he was obviously maybe a prodigy, but he was like a way to get like younger people into the show. Like, oh, here's a young kid and he's part of the adventures too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so but then they kind of like made his role like, you know, by the time they get to Journey's End, he's like, oh, you're maybe almost a god or godlike, you know, or whatever, you know, superhuman.
Yeah, which is why I kind of wish that he'd be part traveler instead of just like a superhuman, because like I love Will Wheaton as a person and, you know, how important he is in geek culture currently. But I don't like the character of Wesley like at all. I would rather him be part alien than just be superhuman god person, which is maybe why, you know, I've formulated my theory about his past and origin the way I did.
Yeah. Second thing is I wanted to bring out was the traveler saying that, you know, time and space, you know, and propulsion systems like he was doing. But then on top of that, he says thought influences this too. And what did you think about that? Like the idea that your thoughts can influence the universe. I thought that was a strange idea behind everything.
I think it's fascinating. It's a fascinating idea because it can make you think, like, is space big because we believe it is and our instruments tell us it is? Or can we believe that it's smaller than it seems?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's an interesting concept, and maybe that belief that things are smaller than they are is what lets a traveler move these vast distances in almost no amount of time.
Right.
I mean, it's an interesting concept, and you know, people are, I know I've read scientists, and you're trying to figure out if we're actually in a computer program or not, and like, you know, does thought, you know, change the parameters of that?
Yeah, I agreed as well. I mean, there's some interesting thoughts there that, like, I mean, does our thoughts control our own reality? You know, like when you get you're in a negative space and you're thinking real negatively, does your negative emotions or thoughts impact your reality? You know, does it manifest itself, or opposite, are you thinking positive about things? Does that impact it as well?
Well, it impacts your health at least.
Oh yeah.
It's interesting. Aaron Gray is going to be at the con. And I'm mentioning this because I do have a point. She's going to be at the con, and I've kind of been researching her because I do want to talk to her and try to get her, you know, at least a little bit of snippet on the show, because she was in Star Trek Continues for two episodes. So it'd be kind of neat to be able to talk with her. And, of course, she was in Buck Rogers, you know, another science fiction thing. So I want to talk with her, but I've been doing research on her. And she said, as an actor, like, Eastern medicine says, like, you know, acting is dangerous to you because you're constantly either raging or sad or upset, and you're doing these emotions, these hard, strong emotions over and over again, and your body doesn't know the difference between pretending to do these emotions and having these emotions for real. And different emotions have a different, you know, impact on your physical well-being. And so she started studying Tai Chi to help fix the problems with her, you know, having to go through these emotions over and over again, which I found was really, really interesting. That's, you know, a take someone has. And I've been looking up videos online trying to do some, and it's actually been helping me sleep. I usually lay in bed for hours at a time before I fall asleep. And I've been trying to do a little bit before I go to bed. And
that's cool.
It's putting me to sleep, which is kind of cool.
I thought all the alcohol would have put you to sleep, but, you know.
I wish, but, you know, a little bit of exercise and, you know, some deep breathing, that does help. So, I mean, I'm not super deep into it. I don't know a whole lot about it. I don't know much. I've been watching a couple short videos before I go to bed, and it's helping me at least sleep and, you know, calm my mind so I can, you know, turn it off and go to sleep, which is it's fascinating. So if it does other stuff for other people, I think that's super interesting at how emotions, you know, play into your life and how you can kind of fix them or change them based on what you do.
Gotcha. But I do believe that there is some truth to that, that there is, like I said, if you're in a negative space or a positive space, you can kind of change how things are. Not maybe not completely, but there is something to be said about like your mindset and what you can do for your reality around you. So it is possible. Maybe if you have a strong enough will, maybe you can change the world around you.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I think one of the Steve Jobs said, like, you know, something like, you know, people who are crazy enough to say they can change the world actually can. It's I'm sure I'm butchering the phrase, but it's just like most people think they think they can't change the world, but if you're crazy enough to think you can, you might.
Yeah, and I think so. There might be some validity to that, but the actual idea that, you know, like your thought or your could transfer things to a propulsion system and you can warp time and space around you, so you can shoot, you know, like however far M33 galaxy is, you know, seems a little strong, but. You know.
Oh yeah, I mean it definitely seems.
I mean he's an alien traveler, so I mean maybe things are different for him.
Yeah, and especially if he's, you know, mostly non-corporeal. I mean, what would you? If you're mostly non-corporeal, what would be able to move you between places? It would have to be thought.
Yeah. Right.
And exactly. And when he's taking the Enterprise with him, he's like latched onto the console. He's basically bear hugging the thing. He's like taking the ship with him. When he's going. Hmm. So, I mean, it's...
He's almost like grabbing it by the console and just pulling it through.
Yeah, just pulling it, you know, along with them. Because, you know, their instruments say the ship never really went past 1.5.
Hmm. Yeah, right. Exactly. It's interesting that he could even do that. Like slingshot it across it that far.
Yeah, I mean, it's... I mean, like, I'm just, you know, kind of, you know, just postulating on just the visual cues we have based on what... And then also saying what they're saying that thought propels them. But if he's not a corporeal being most of the time, which, I mean, apparently he isn't since he just disappears. And when he disappears, he's not dead because he doesn't manifest in two other episodes. So if he's mostly a non-corporeal thing, well, the only thing that could transport him would be thought.
Right. Right, but and then maybe that's how he got involved with going with Kozinski. Originally, he found him and thought this is a great way for me to hitchhike through the universe and kind of just like, you know, get to meet all these people in the Federation space
and then, you know, be able to, you know, experience it, you know, physically instead of, you know, actually be there instead of kind of just floating over it or whatever it is like to be non-corporeal.
Right. And so that all being said, so the traveler is a bit of an explorer in that sense. I mean, like I suppose he could just kind of like float around if he wanted to, but maybe the warp drives can help him get there faster
or
maybe he can just as well, just check out the local cuisine, you know?
Yeah, maybe. Wesley. Other young boy. That's a nice cuisine.
Mm.
Lean cuisine.
Lean cuisine. Yeah. Yeah, he and I guess the final
he didn't take the chubby Argyle. Chief Argyle. He was all about that Wesley.
I do want to touch on Argyle. Like, where did he go? He just disappeared after first season.
Well, yeah, so. they gave Geordi, instead of making the blind guy fly, let's make the blind guy fix the engines. Because, I mean, Geordi flew pretty much the entire first season. He was, you know, the pilot. Which, I mean, I guess that was kind of Gene Roddenberry's point, but then I guess it's like, oh, I guess we don't have Argyle anymore. We've got to make one of the main people the... It was really strange not having a main character be the engineer in the first season. Just Argyle showed up every now and then whenever they needed an engineer. Now let's get into the creep factor.
Yeah. I mean, do you want to...
Geordi, just... creep factor 7.
Exactly. I mean, like I said, his character is so placid and so...
pasty. And like they made him even pastier in the second two episodes.
Yeah.
It's just, I don't... I don't know. They made really weird design decisions and really weird acting decisions. Because, I mean, I know I joked about it before on previous episodes where I've said, like, whenever the Traveler's in sick bay and Picard's, like, there, he's like, everyone go, go, go. I've got to tell Picard something very important that no one else can hear.
Oh, right.
And he's like, yeah, he's Wesley Special. I'm gonna try to restrain myself till he's 18 and just let me know.
I'm just trying to hold back, man.
Trying to hold really back.
Bad. I don't want to get a bad rap.
I can't go for underage cadets, but you know.
Well, once he gets that sweet age,
then I can take him across the universe and show him the stars and my camel toe.
So he definitely has that. I mean, at first it seems like friendly, and then it just seems like, why is he just keep on showing up? You know,
I think it's absolutely the worst. I mean, like, it's weird where no one has gone before. It's not weird in Remember Me, even though the name of the episode is called Remember Me, and I totally did not remember the Traveler being in that episode at all until I read the Memory Alpha and rewatched the episode. Very strange. And we talked before the episode, and you said you didn't remember him being in that episode either, which is really strange, especially right. Considering the episode's called Remember Me. And like,
Right.
Like, the Traveler come through and erase both our minds of him being in this episode? It's so weird. And then I think it's the creepiest in Journey's End, because, like, he's the Kuta Kinte guy or whatever.
Kuta Kinte?
No. Oh. No, not a Kuta Kinte. No, what's his name? The Indian guy, the proto Chakotay.
Lakanta.
Lakanta. Lakanta, he's like watching Wesley. He like walks up to Wesley and 10 forward. And he's like watching him on the planet. You're coming to this cave. Let's smoke some herbs and, you know, all this weird.
Oh, yeah. Get
and
him,
then at
get
the end, yeah. Get him high.
A little juiced up before we take him on his journey.
And then he reveals himself as the Traveler at the end. I'm like, man, that's so creepy. That's by far the creepiest thing that the Traveler did, I think. It's just like.
So he's looking to get a date. So he gets his love interest all like high and
high and whacked out,
and then he makes his move.
Puts on an Indian skin so he can look exotic to his to his human eyes.
So is the costume he wears is just what it looks like for in his bodily form.
Yes.
So it's like it's so his outfit.
It's tall and frumpy.
Yeah, he's like a skinwalker or something like that.
It's like if Slender Man wasn't wearing a suit.
Oh, man. That's got it's even creepier.
Yes. Oh, my God. I bet no one's ever made that comparison before. Traveler equals Slender Man.
Well, maybe not Slender Man, but like I said, maybe a skinwalker. You know, some people say that they make you, they look like you, or they take on a form of somebody else. So,
Which is also why I kept saying that he was Jack Crusher for a little while, because they can take human form or whatever form they want. I mean, they're super creepy, and he's the only Traveler we ever see. So we don't know if that's just a general thing for all Travelers, or if it's. And then he's like, "Oh yeah, you can't pronounce my name." It's like, "I don't have a name. Shit, I don't have a name."
Jack Crusher.
I'll just tell people they can't pronounce it, and I'll just be like, "Oh, just call me the Traveler," because I go places. He should hang out with a pack lead.
Oh my god!
Can you make us go?
I think that would be just annoying.
And they're super frumpy too, but they're not. They're not lean cuisine like Wesley.
Yeah, I don't think he goes that way. I think he goes nice, young, lean, and mean.
And actually smart, because packlet are not smart. So I guess I guess he wouldn't hang out with the packlet.
So he didn't just go for Wesley's body. He was also going for his mind.
Yeah, that's true.
So you can't say he's like a total creep.
But he's super creepy. He's just goes off creepy, as creepy.
But, you know, maybe like you said, maybe he waited until he was age, and then the age of consent, and then he was like, "Hey, Wesley, me and you across the universe."
But then he builds up, like, "Oh, you're like Mozart," and it's like, "So, I became a prodigy, and then I died super young. That's not a great comparison."
Oh, jeez,
poor Mozart.
He did die.
He did die really young.
Well, maybe the Traveler picked him up.
Oh, maybe. Maybe he did. Maybe he just plays piano for the Traveler all the time.
Come to my music room. I have Mozart playing nonstop. Please make me stop.
No. Here.
Ah.
It would just be utter madness.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, all joking aside, the Traveler could, you know, do you think it was a mutual friendship that he saw something in Wesley, or do you think that he actually thought Wesley is a young proto-traveler or soon-to-be traveler, like going to make that jump to traveler?
My personal take on it is that he's just following up on his kid, because I think he impregnated posed as Jack and impregnated Beverly. I think he's just making sure his kid follows in his footsteps. I think that's what's going on. But you know, but also I know Gene Roddenberry is wanting humans to evolve. So I think your idea that it's just normal and then it just Wesley's evolving.
Well,
is also possible too.
Your take is, you know, the Traveler's the Holy Spirit, Beverly is Mary, and Wesley is a young Jesus Christ.
And they were trying to go super religious with it. In the original script, they wanted Where No Man Has Gone Before. They wanted them to be gone for 6 days and then say something like, "Oh, they rested on the seventh and they just kind of hung out." Like they were lost for 6 days. Like the script went through so many different little rewrites.
Did they really? Would they want to do that?
For no one. Yeah, it's weird. Like the only thing that's from the original script that made it into the episode is Picard almost falling out of the turbo shaft and Picard talking to his mother or his grandmama or whatever she was. Those were the only two scenes that were left from the original script. The Traveler and Kaczynski were added later, and there was a bunch of weird stuff. I mean, they didn't go into it in super detail, but they said they wanted it to be like kind of religious, and kind of like this too. There's like this biblical thing a little bit in the episode, but then they kind of like just kind of left it, and they totally changed it. But the same, but you saying that, you know, he's the Holy Spirit and she's Mary and he's Jesus, and I'm like, you know, it sort of a little bit goes in with the biblical aspect of what they're briefly alluded to in the Memory Alpha.
But that's strange that would even be an angle that they were even originally going with, because seeing how Roddenberry was an atheist, so like what would the logic behind that be? Was that just the writers, or?
I guess so. Let's see. In the original teleplay, Kaczynski was responsible for the warp effect and the accident. He also had a son who felt his father is more interested in his work than him. The hallucinations were much more bizarre in the actual episode. Jack Crusher appeared to Picard and Beverly, and the Enterprise appeared inside a cosmological egg where the starship escaped and it exploded and it caused the birth of a new universe. A sort of biblical pun, quote-unquote. The Enterprise spends 6 days missing and Picard orders the next day to be a day of rest. This is according to the Star Trek The Next Generation Compendium, page 36.
Huh. That's weird.
Yeah, it's really weird.
I don't know. So, who knows? I mean, who knows what the thought behind all that was? I mean, that they would do that,
thing is, I mean, I think your idea that it just went through chronological, and then Wesley's just, you know, Jack Crusher and Beverly were just people, and Wesley's just changing. I think that's also valid, because I know Gene Roddenberry wanted that for the human race to be evolving and becoming better.
And the next thought is that Journey's End, obviously they have the spiritual side of the American Indians.
Well, Roddenberry's dead at this point, though.
Right, but I mean, obviously it has a huge bent on that spiritual side of it. You know, that's a huge angle of that story.
Yeah, the Vision Quest, and then, you know, them staying on the planet, the Traveler and Wesley staying on the planet to learn more from them. Which is also kind of weird. It's like, oh, we're going to just go away. Because, like, you know, Traveler tells Wesley, oh, you have to trust them to solve their own problems because they're small and little and stupid. We're big and enlightened. We're going to leave. And then it's like, Wesley's back. And then it's like, oh, yeah, we're going to hang out here in the scary demilitarized zone and just learn from the Indians and their struggles against the Cardassians.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I kind of took it as that this is just the starting point. You've crunched all the numbers about how to, you know, with propulsion systems. You know all that stuff. Now we're going to get on the spiritual side, and this is a great place to start.
Yeah.
You know? That's how I took it. And not that they were going to be there forever. Maybe they'd be there for 6 months to a year, and then they'd go do their next thing, you know? But anyways, I looked in memory beta, and the only other thing about the Traveler that really shows up that he was in a mentioned in a novel called A Time to Be Born. So, And that's basically all that's been really written about the Traveler, which just seems strange that there would be. You would think the Traveler would pop up more often.
Well, not if he's pegged as a pedophile. Maybe people don't want to touch that with a 10-foot pole. I mean, you know.
But there should even be something.
Or maybe that's just our twisted, you know, irreverent view at Star Trek, thinking that he's a pedophile. Who knows? But I mean.
Or what about some gay erotica? I mean, like, why isn't that out there?
I don't know. I don't know. Maybe they're not popular enough characters. I mean, there's definitely lots of slash fiction in Star Trek, but it's usually involving the more popular characters. You know, Kirk, Spock, slash fiction.
Right. Right.
You know, like, you know, maybe some of the women in Voyager, you know, a Dax, you know, Dax and Kira slash fiction.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. I'm sure that because they're bigger characters. Wesley was generally hated. I mean, I don't know anyone besides Gene Roddenberry who, I mean, I don't know Gene Roddenberry, but I know Gene Roddenberry was very protective of the character of Wesley. But I don't know anyone that just was in love with the character of Wesley. So, I mean, like, I don't think he's going to get, you know, a lot of stuff written about him because I just don't think he was a popular character. And then on top of, and then you got the Traveler who only appeared 3 times. And one of the times was so forgetful. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either.
They're just probably not popular enough to get slash fiction written for them. Although, you know, the internet's a big, vast place. Maybe there is somewhere.
That's a good point. Maybe it's hidden some hidden.
It's a deep web fan fiction.
Oh, jeez. Well, people, if you're listening to this, you know what you have to do.
If you find it, send it to us at syntholics@yahoo.com.
Yeah, or if you've written it.
If you've written it, you know, you can send it to us. Let us know if you're the writer of the some Star Trek slash fiction. Maybe we can read some on the air. Maybe that can be a Patreon thing. We can read the parts back and forth, me and you, Aaron.
Or how about we just read a slash fiction period?
Yeah, as a Patreon reward, we'll just, like, you know, you can be Spock, I'll be Kirk or something like that. We can just read the slash fiction.
Oh my god, that's hilarious.
As a Patreon reward. What do you guys think? Do you think that would be a fun Patreon reward? Let us know.
Yeah, definitely.
That would be hilarious.
That actually might be really fun to do.
Because I know Last Spot Cousin left, like, I think they do, like, a Bible readings and, like, just different creepypasta readings. They keep it in Star Trek. We could do, like, you know, slash fiction readings. But, like, narrated, like where we played the different parts.
Oh, my God. It's just going to be uncomfortable.
I don't know. I just random crazy idea. I don't know what
that,
you guys
that is. That is a very funny idea, though. So let us know if that's something you would like to see.
Would you like to hear that? Would you be willing to pay us on Patreon for that? Let us know.
Oh, so funny.
Do you want to hear us whore each other out?
Oh, my God. So we've gone through all the Traveler angles, I think, possible. And like I said, unfortunately, even in the fandom, he's very underdeveloped.
I just wish Q was in one of the episodes with the Traveler, because I would love to get Q's take on what the Traveler is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just to maybe get that fleshed out a little bit. And, you know, speaking of the Q and knowing what things are, I want to know what Guinan's race.
There's kind of like some, you don't really know what's going on with them.
Yeah. And, you know, Q's like, let me get this monster off your ship. And then, like, you know, Guinan puts up her hands, like she can do something to defend herself against the Q. So, I mean, like, Guinan's more than what she seems to. So there's just so much unexplored stuff in Star Trek. Maybe Discovery will hit upon some of these unexplored things, because
I doubt it.
Yeah. But I mean,
The one thing is it says that in the Q-tinium in the series, the Traveler had a reputation with them. So the Traveler is known to the Q.
Well, I'm sure. I mean, the Q are omnipotent, so they would need to know about the Q. I mean, the Travelers,
but they had a significant reputation among the Q.
Is that from the Memory Beta?
No, this is in Memory Alpha and background information. So
it must have been written by the writers in a backstory in some kind of Star Trek impendium somewhere, because it's not in the three episodes we saw.
Well, yeah, we don't know anything about that, but who knows? You know?
Yeah.
It's just an interesting. That was one of their books, I guess.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I mean, there's lots of different Star Trek books compendiums that kind of go into some extra information, which a lot of what is in them is on Memory Alpha. So Memory Alpha is an amazing resource. So if you ever have a question about Star Trek and want to look it up, Memory Alpha is a good place. Yeah. But you know, you can always email us if you have questions about us and the show. Because I mean, if you want to hear our take on it, you can always email us. Synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Absolutely, and I hear you have another email for us.
Yes, I do have an email from my brother, Joshua. It's a couple weeks old, so I apologize being late on the draw. So, from my brother, Trek Novels, he said a few episodes ago, which will be even more now, you requested some fan mail about Star Trek Novels. I haven't read many, but I am several books into the Star Trek novel series called Seekers. I don't know if it's technically Star Trek canon, but it's an outstanding series, and I would highly recommend it to any Star Trek fan, especially if you're a fan of the original series episode formula. It's got everything you could possibly want: accidental first contact with a strange pre-warp civilization, intense moral dilemmas, and Klingon interference evil agendas. The only thing that's not consistent with old-school Star Trek is that the story is pretty brutal. If the movie adaptation was made of the story, would no doubt be giving a hard R rating, and is set in the TOS era and focuses on a small Federation Archer-class scout ship. It's also built off the events of a TOS episode. The name of the episode escapes me at the moment, but it's the one where Kirk touches the alien artifact and thinks that he is the native and gets married, I think.
Oh, yeah, that one. I remember that one.
Shoot, that's Kirok? Oh, that's what he calls himself. I don't remember if that's the name of the episode or not.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
But Warp 11 has a song called Kirok, and that it narrates the plot of that episode, which is pretty good. Let's see. Probably Shatner's favorite episode, where he thinks he's a god. Meanwhile, while Spock takes the Enterprise to deal with a large meteor that's on a collision course with the planet Kirk is on. Anyway, very exciting story. These books were hard to put down. It's highly recommended. Oh, and David, sorry we didn't get around to Star Trek commentary when you were down visiting. That would have been cool. I didn't realize Leah's reception was only 12 hours long. We would have stayed longer if I could have. Hopefully next time, Joshua. Yeah, for the wedding, my brother was only when I went down on vacation, we was only stay for a little bit, and my sister's reception was literally the entire day.
Wow, that's crazy.
It was fun. It was a great time, but it was an all day thing. So my brother thought, you know, he didn't realize it was going to be that long. So he thought we'd be able to hang out more, but you know, it was cool. It's good getting to see him. I hadn't seen him in years, so.
Right,
it was a good time. Yeah, thanks for the recommendations on the books.
I actually seen the Seekers book before, and it's like it's funny because, you know, these novels, a lot of times you can burn through them like within a couple days if, you know, it's according to what your time schedule is. But, you know, like I can get through them in like 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
But like I saw this, but, you know, a lot of these novels you can read and you're just like, oh, what a crappy book, you know, like, so like I never know which one's good, you know. I would love to see like a site that just like ranks like what's good and what's bad, you know, like what are good books you really should read.
But that's a problem. I mean, what's good and bad is totally subjective to the person.
Yeah, but you know, you kind of know too, like some are kind of boring and some are more exciting. I've read a few Star Trek novels or just literally just like watching paint dry.
Oh, that's painful. I mean, yeah. Like I haven't read George R. R. Martin's Game of Thrones, but I would imagine reading them would be a pain. I listened to them in audiobook, and it made it really digestible that way. I just don't know if I'd be able to make it through those, you know, reading them. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, because I was actually thinking about that today, just in general. Like, I mean, some stories, I mean, just maybe better for the audio medium, just because just you can appreciate the story instead of having to read through the details.
True enough. Yeah, absolutely.
Because, I mean, The Hobbit and, you know, Lord of the Rings, and those are fantastic stories, but just having to wade through all the boring details when you're reading it is kind of a drag. Because, I mean, I just, I just have a hard time reading those books, even now. As much as I love the movies, I just feel like the books drag.
Really? I don't really have – they kind of flow pretty quickly for me. I didn't find that they're written, like especially The Hobbit. They're almost written for a young person. Lord of the Rings gets a little more in-depth, but
– Well, the last time I read Lord of the Rings, I felt like The Two Towers was the only one that flowed really well. And I feel like The Two Towers was almost written by someone completely different because, like, I read The Fellowship of the Ring and it was kind of clunky. And The Two Towers are super smooth. I remember, like, going through Two Towers and I was like, wow, this is almost feels like a different Arthur. And then I went back to Return of the King and I was like, it was kind of clunky like Fellowship was for me. I mean, that was just my personal take on reading the books.
Yeah, right.
But speaking of books you should read and things you should see, American Gods. I don't think you've seen it yet, Aaron.
I haven't watched it, no, but I've read the book.
The first episode is absolutely amazing. I have no idea what the show's about after an hour of TV, but I'm still hooked. It was absolutely amazing. And I guess we should have probably talked about this in news because Brian Fuller is the executive producer on that show. And now that he's not executive producing Star Trek Discovery, he's got me even more disappointed now at how amazing the first episode of American Gods was.
Right.
Like,
right.
It just, I mean, I know he didn't write it, but I mean, just his take on it, his producing, the way he does TV. I mean, he got away with a ton of stuff on TV with Hannibal. And right. Like, it was one of the most violent shows. And then, you know, this is on Starz, so he can take it up a notch. And he did. And it was just, and just the storytelling and the visual aspect of it's absolutely amazing. And I'm so sad that he's not involved with Star Trek anymore after seeing how good this is.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've seen some of the previews for it. It looks great. I just haven't had a chance to sit down and watch it. So I do plan on watching it as soon as I can. But yeah, I mean, like I said, I read the novel. The novel's fantastic. And now they have the comic out, which I've read, like, I think, two issues already.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not really crazy about the comic art adaption of it. But the story's just so much fun. So.
It seems like it's going to be really wild. The first episode just kind of scratches the surface and it kind of jumps around a little bit. Like, I don't know what I'm looking at, but it's amazing.
That's cool.
It's just like, wow, this is so cool.
Right.
And just really well done and really compelling. Like, just immediately. Like, that's how you do a first episode of television. And Star Trek Discovery has got to be this compelling because the first episode's going to be on CBS and then the other episodes are going on that paywall, and that first episode's got to be super compelling to get people to watch it.
Get people into it, right? Exactly. Let's hope so. Guy said he thinks that in summertime, late summertime, they're going to release it. So,
well, Les Moonves has said twice recently that it's fall. This is on the heels of the guy saying we have no release date planned. Les Moonves has said at least twice now that it's going to be fall again.
I wonder if it's because now the writer's strike is off now. So,
well, I mean the writing should have been done. I mean, there I also saw something that Les Moonves said. I think on like a CBS, like, you know, those stock shareholders meetings or something like that. He said there's like several episodes in the can already. And the season's only going to be 13 episodes unless they've changed their minds on it. So, I mean, having someone that can, I mean, I just imagine they're just shooting it at the moment.
Yeah, sure, but sometimes there's, like, rewrites they have to do real quickly for one reason or another. So, yeah, who knows? That's cool, but hopefully it is kick-ass. Maybe Brian Fuller's influence will be well seen and felt in those first couple episodes.
I hope so, because he wrote the first two, and then he left or was asked to leave. I'm not sure exactly how it went down. It seems like there's, you know, some things say this, some things say that.
Right. Well, maybe we'll find out in 10 years from now.
Who knows?
Right.
But I don't know. I just can't wait for the next episode of American Gods, and I can't wait to see how Star Trek Discovery turns out. I hope it's super compelling because, I mean, just American Gods, it was super compelling. I was like, I don't even know what I'm watching, and I love this. So, it's
cool.
It's cool. But,
yeah.
All our music is funded by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find me at David_J_Duncan. The show is at Synthaholic Duo.
I'm at Blackbird2004.
And guys at GS Davis Art. You can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. We love stars and we love reviews that these help us get seen so that more people can find the show, because we're here for you. We're here for the listeners. And the more listeners we have, the happier we'll be.
Everyone will be.
Everyone will be, yeah. We'll be able to provide more content and everything when more people find us and fall in love with us and think, hey, these guys are funny. These guys like Star Trek, but they take it seriously, but they're also,
we want you too. We want you to fall in love with us like the Traveler fell in love with Wesley.
But even worse.
Just take us over the council. What are you doing to that young boy?
Sweet, sweet slash fiction.
Oh. So, talking about slash fiction and possible readings.
If you guys think that's a good idea, let us know. And, maybe we'll make that a reward on our Patreon. You can find that at patreon.com/synthaholics. And if you want to support Guy and his art, is it patreon.com/GSDavisArt.
Yeah, and in addition, if you have any other suggestions, just shoot us an email, synthaholics@yahoo.com. We love to hear from you. We love to read emails online or on the show, so that'd be great to hear from anybody.
Yeah, and we still haven't heard if you want that that tier where Aaron runs naked through the woods. We're still waiting on that one.
Just no takers.
No takers on that one. Aaron proposed this over like a year and a half ago, and no one has said anything about it.
It's almost 2 years, yeah.
Yeah, it's almost 2 years. Yeah, because it's starting to warm up again, so we can actually do that in Buffalo, run naked through the woods.
And lastly, if you know anybody who'd be interested in a Star Trek podcast, into talking sci-fi with some levity to it, let them know about Synthaholics so that, word of mouth is a wonderful thing to get people to know that this is a great podcast to listen to.
Word of mouth is the best thing because, we don't really advertise or anything. So we need you to spread the word with your mouths.
Absolutely. Yeah. Sure thing.
Most definitely. Well, it's good to be back. Thank you, Aaron, and for talking with Guy and doing that episode last week. It was fantabulous. It was long. It was epic. It was interesting.
Yeah, we had fun. I think we went a little bit too long. I think I lost track of time because me and Guy were having such a fun conversation. But, we got kind of lost in our own world there.
Yeah, but it was definitely a fun listen. It was also a bizarre thing being... not being on an episode. It was the first episode I've not been on. I was like, wow, that's really weird. But it's really cool to hear it continue on without me. It was awesome. So thank you. Thank you guys for that. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad we could do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you, one and all. Thank you for listening. Hope you all have a great day, evening, morning, whenever you happen to listen to this. Live long and prosper, one and all. Bullshit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Woo.
Cool. Very cool. I'm looking up slash fiction Star Trek.
Alrighty, here we go. Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is, I'm back, David, and...
Why don't you start again?
Yeah. Welcome to Synthaholics. I'm back. It's David.
It's terrible.
I just did the normal thing.
Yeah. And then I'll say, it's nice to have you back. Hey, buddy, hold on a second.
Ka-caw, ka-caw.
Ka-caw, ka-caw, ka-caw.